morning and welcome to The Pocket Show on the British Cine Network. I am here with two-thirds of a panel. We will have a full complement if Mr. Woods ever manages to get his microphone working. Meantime, I will introduce you to one of the, what I've decided to dub the Pocket Show All-Stars, Chris Ashley from the SMR podcast. How are you this evening, sir?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for having me back. Hello, British Tech Network.
Yes, you're very welcome. You were due being the big show this week, weren't you?
But a little gaffe going on over there. It's okay though.
I think Ewan's been very busy this past week, so unfortunately we had no shows out last week, which is a bit of a shame. But never mind. They all should be back to normal this week. And making his debut, albeit this was supposed to be your second appearance on the network, because you were also caught up in the shows being cancelled last week. Mr. Steve Sandy of the unofficial Apple weblog. How are you this evening, sir?
I am doing wonderfully, thank you very much. And it's warm here, but actually really warm today.
Right.
I'm surviving, let me put it that way. I'm just sweating a lot.
Yes. Whereabouts in the States are you?
Colorado.
Oh, right.
Just south of Denver in a little place called Highlands Ranch. So
very nice.
Well, a little place, 100,000 people, so that's little.
Yeah, that's pretty much the size of Scotland, but you know, it's little. it's very, very warm here as well. I was just saying to Chris before you came on the call, I suppose it is unseasonably warm here. We're kind of sitting on the 21 degrees. I don't know what that is in you guys' money, but it's 21 degrees for us, and it's pretty damn warm. Everywhere around us is sold out of shorts and t-shirts and stuff because nobody's used to having to buy them so regularly. Pretty crazy. But very good. And we'll also be having Mr. Christopher Woods, who long-term listeners might know from a few shows in the network, such as the F1 show and things like that. He is technically here. He's here in spirit, and he's in the chat, and he can hear me, but his microphone isn't working. So you may on occasion hear... Oh, hello. Oh, is he here?
Well, you say that, but for my grand entrance.
See, all this was you were just building up the tension just to appear when I mention you.
I have been contorting myself into positions I did not think I could accomplish.
And so finally on Android this evening, we have Mr. Christopher Woods, who has just made a grand entrance right on time. Well done, sir.
A good afternoon.
Now that's how you walk into a podcast right there. That's how you do it. The only thing missing was theme music.
You know, on another show, it was actually suggested we try and have theme music, but that was quickly shut down because... Very good. Oh, well, that's great. That's a good start to the podcast. Are you good now that you've got all your Skype sorted out? Are you having a good day, Mr. Woods?
It's improved. It's just improved. A big deal. However, I now have about 2 hours worth of reconfiguration to do. I hit the big red panic button and reset everything. And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. But the things you do for podcasts.
Yes, and we're very grateful for you doing those things so you could join us this evening. Thank you very much,
sir. I'm very grateful for you waiting 14 hours for me to get ready.
Very good.
It's okay, we're all here and everyone else is still awake, so let's continue.
Cool. Okay, very good. So we will push straight on into the first news story. Unless you've been living under a rock this past couple of weeks, and that rock repels all tech news stories, you will of course have heard of Satya Nadella's a couple of memos that have went out. Quite sad news, really, for almost anybody who works at Microsoft. I would imagine. I mean, it's a good thing on one hand because there's a vision clearly being carved out there, but on the negative sides, there is a lot of layoffs, somewhere in the region of 18,000 job cuts. And of those job cuts, the majority, I believe, somewhere in the region of about 12,500 are to be cut from the Nokia business. That, as we know, Microsoft purchased a while ago, but it just kind of went through in the last kind of few months. Part of that means that they are actually cutting the Nokia X Android line. Now, as far as I can tell, they're keeping the Nokia X line, but they're just making a Windows phone and just completely getting rid of the Android phones now. We spoke about this on the show before, and this is the phone that had Android under the hood, but it looked, for all intents and purposes, like a Windows phone.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be completely clearing Android out. This is according to the Microsoft Devices Chief Stephen Elop, who of course was the former Nokia CEO, and he sent an email to Microsoft employees. We will be particularly focused on making the market for Windows Phone. So I mean, this is quite clear. It's quite obvious what they're doing here, but it seems to be a little bit of a quite quick turnaround. I mean, what do you think, Chris? I was a bit shocked at this. I was equally shocked that they did it in the first place, but I'm also shocked that they've just kind of went, nope, stop, we're carrying on without it.
Well, I have such mixed feelings about this, because as a Windows Phone advocate and fan, I'm happy because I don't want to see Microsoft producing anything but Windows phones. That's sure. What I want them to do. I want them to build the best. I want them to continue to make flagship all the way down to budget minded Windows phones. So, but as a Microsoft fan as well, you're like, you know, Android is dominating the world. Should you ignore it as a hardware device, or, you know, because certainly they're not ignoring it from a software standpoint. So, it just puts me on both sides of the fence. But overall, I think I'm leaning towards just being happy. I'm not surprised that they did it, because I really felt that this Nokia X device came out of nowhere. And I think it kind of came to revelation when Microsoft was looking to purchase Nokia. Nokia has to come out and say, well, we've been working on this Android device. And they're like, what? So I'm not too shocked by it at all, to be honest with you. If Microsoft is look and with 18,000 job cuts, that's a good chunk of the Nokia business at 12,000.
Sure.
Folks. So, but obviously it seems that there's a direction in mind and some streamlining that needs to be done. So it kind of makes sense. If you're going to cut a bunch of Nokia staff, then you better, pare down what you're producing out of that camp anyway. So you can't basically produce two different phones with two different operating systems. That's just going to require a lot more research, a lot more work, a lot more experts on both sides, a lot more testing, as opposed to sticking with their vision of creating these low budget Lumia phones, which they've done very well with. I mean, it's responsible for the majority of growth of Windows Phone is these low budget Lumia phones. So the Android phone geared towards Microsoft services doesn't really make a lot of sense in that regard, because the certain fact is, you have OneNote in the Google Play Store, you have messaging apps, you have, believe an Outlook app in there now. And certainly, Office and all that stuff will be there, in full force, because it only makes sense. You want to put your leading software on every single platform that exists. And so, there's not really a need to create a secondary device, an Android device, to bring people into the OS, put your services on the Android base, and you got what you wanted.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as you alluded to there, of course, this was something that got done by Nokia. Perhaps, I mean, we don't know how long the talks were going on between Microsoft and Nokia, but this is definitely something that happened prior to the Microsoft announcing the sale. So this was clearly just Nokia trying some different things out and things like that. So, I mean, I'm not shocked about this, but, part of me kind of... Have any of you actually had a go at the Nokia X phone? Have any of you seen the interface or anything like that?
I've never held it. I've looked at the UI. And I've never held it, never used it personally. But I did look through the UI when the pictures came out. And, it looked nice. It looked like a very, as you mentioned, very similar to Windows Phone. But, but if you're going to do that, just go with a Windows Phone. And if you want Android, just go with Android.
Yeah. Okay. Christopher, did you say something, or have you had a shot of one?
I have not seen one. I was watching... having seen the photos, I'm not sad. I was just thinking back to the last announcement they made when they said they were going to lay off, 10,000 people? Mm-hmm. Huge amount. And that was back in 2012. So having lost 10,000, I didn't even think they had 18,000 people to lose.
Oh, well, I mean, as a, at least 12,500 of those are coming from Nokia. And there's also supposedly quite a bit of it's coming from the kind of sales and marketing side of things as well, which, as we discussed...
Yeah, I can only imagine as well that there's got to be a lot of duplication engineering-wise in Microsoft and Nokia. So hopefully... Well, they say they're closing posts, perhaps, instead of actually losing people, because there's got to be some people doing perhaps two things, and they'll shrink the business down and kind of fold it back into Microsoft more, which would be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, as a guy who's been through two company purchases in the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years, you know, it sucks, you know, because you want the purchase goes through, because even in that first year when nothing happens, you're still sitting there wondering, when's the hammer coming down? And of course, you know, for the folks that stay, it's tough because you're seeing friends that you've worked with disappear and, you know, having to, you know, go through some hardship. And then obviously the folks that are getting cut are going to be extremely disappointed in a stressful situation. So my heart goes out to, you know, those folks in that situation.
Of course, yeah. No, it's not pleasant at all. You know, but I think I feel quite good about this, and we had a bit of a laugh. None of you guys were in the last show, but we had a bit of a laugh in the last show, and we kind of poked a little bit of fun at Microsoft prior to obviously these announcements coming out. It was a couple of folk that I spoke to at the bash who were quite critical of what we had to say, but I still stand by the fact that I'm quite critical of Microsoft in the past, and I am very excited to see where Satya Nadella takes it now. And this has sort of reinforced my feeling on that he's quite clearly not afraid to make the big decisions. He's quite clearly prepared to just take a scalpel and start cutting at it, and cutting at Microsoft. And hopefully, what they're going to end up with is a good business going forward. And you know, as I read an article and I mentioned before, is that they're talking about quite a lot of these job cuts are in sales and marketing, and that is a shame. Don't get me wrong; I'm not saying it's a good thing for the people who are losing their jobs, and that's awful. Nobody likes that to happen. But equally, this might get a little bit of fresh blood in there. It might get maybe cut out some of the people who perhaps. We're just coasting other jobs, and get some good guys in there and actually start to turn the brand into something like it was, you know, what, 10, 15 years ago or something like that. Chris, you probably disagree with this, but I kind of feel it's lost its way a little bit, and I'm quite hopeful to see what Microsoft can do in the future.
Just saying, as a fan of the company, you know, you want to see, you know, stuff like this happen, because of course you want the company to be streamlined, focused, and lightweight. And one of the biggest knocks against Microsoft over the last 10, 15, 20 years is how slow they are to move forward, and they can't keep up because they're such a gigantic company. So, you know, obviously the way to get around that is to streamline your processes, streamline your workforce, and, you know, and be a lot more nimble with what you're doing. I mean, they've sped up the releases of Windows so far with, you know, 8.1 that came out right not too far after 8.0. You see that even on the Xbox, there's almost been an update every single month.
Yeah.
For Xbox. So I guess, you know, you kind of look at some of these things and see that as potentially a proof of concept that they can become a lot more nimble as a company. So it's to be expected, especially if you're a fan in the company.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the key thing to take away from this, and I can't remember what website I saw this quote on, was Microsoft didn't buy Nokia to give Android a lift, and this is what they're doing here. I don't know, we've kind of went off and talked about other things around marketing and things like that, but that is the key thing about this particular story, is that they're not... It's quite clear that they can go back. Part of me kind of thinks that, why didn't they just, if it looks that similar, the actual interface on the Android device looks that similar, on the Windows device looks that similar, you know, could they have just done the switch and not showed anybody? You know, if the UI looks exactly the same, would anybody have known? Sort of, but I don't know if that would work. They probably would have gotten quite a bit of heat for that, actually, I would imagine. Steve, you've been quite quiet in this one. Were you surprised by this, or were you kind of...
It's kind of interesting. No, I'm really finding this fascinating, because between about 98 or 99 and I think about 2007, I used to regularly get invited to Microsoft's Mobius conferences, which were tech bloggers would come in and Microsoft would show them kind of the direction that they thought they were going to be going in for the next several years in the mobile space. And you know, in that 9-year period where I was going to those, I couldn't believe how many different versions we kept seeing. You know, it wasn't just minor changes in their mobile operating systems. A lot of those were very major. And, you know, I always wondered about just how much, in terms of resources, money they were spending on making these jumps. Mm. And the bad thing was, is they were really holding this thing to try to get some input from tech bloggers, people who, you know, were kind of in the know or are supposed to be in the know. They were trying to get information and feedback on their direction. And we would give them some absolutely great ideas. And, you know, a lot of these people are still out there, still, you know, writing, still doing a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it seemed like Microsoft just never listened. And in that last year, 2007, I thought it was really kind of telling. It was held in Boston, and I think about, I don't know, September, October. So it was after the iPhone had come out, and pretty much everybody that was there had an iPhone.
Yeah.
And I remember they were very, you know, they kept joking about it. Ah, well, you know, next series of our phone, you're gonna be getting rid of those iPhones. Yet we talked about to the, you know, a lot of their staff there and marketing people about, no, this isn't what, you know, this is what people want, not that. And it was just absolutely fascinating how little they really listened. Hopefully now they're going to be in a situation where they're going to listen a little bit more. And I'm really hoping as well that Microsoft has gotten, you know, I hate to say this, but gotten rid of some of the people who may have held up doing some really innovative things in the Windows Phone space. So
I think you see that already.
I just can't see them failing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you see that already with, you know, the completely reorganization of Windows Phone team and management itself. They completely cleared out a lot of those hard-nosed guys that were, you know, basically, we're going to do it our way. And you know, you see that with the fact that the next version of Windows will bring back the start screen. And all of this stuff was a direct result of feedback and suggestions from the user base. So I agree with you. You know, you know, as a product manager, you want to walk that line very well. You don't want to just add stuff that people are screaming at because it may not coincide with what your resources can do as well as what your vision is for future. Sure. But at the same time, you want to be able to incorporate enough of what people are suggesting that makes sense for the masses. So I understand that fine line in my personal life and my professional life. You know, you're right. There was an egregious time period where it was just everything was being ignored. And you see, that seems to be changing now. I agree with you.
Yep. Yeah, hopefully. And also, another quite big change. This was actually about a week and a half ago, so you probably heard a lot about it, but hopefully we'll get some new interesting sidelines on this. So Apple have announced last week that they're going to partner with IBM. And the main kind of key in this is to get iOS devices into big business. So there's a few kind of facets to this. It's basically all around IBM introducing all sorts of kind of management and platforms and things like that. So in particular, a platform called Mobile First Supply, which will be also, that's not a platform, it's more of a kind of an initiative, Mobile First Supply, which will be around device supply, activation and management for iPhones and iPads, and also enable leasing options for devices, software and services. IBM is also developing Mobile First Platform, which will be end-to-end enterprise capability, including analytics, workflow and cloud storage and all that kind of stuff. And IBM is also due to release a productivity suite and put in some kind of app store as well that's going to be accessible through these iPhones and iPads in business. And both Apple and IBM seem very, very chuffed about this. Of course, we had Tim Cook kind of talking about it with the CEO of IBM, which I'm going to pad out in the hopes that I can find the name of her because I've not written that down in my show notes.
Bad Ginny me. Rometty.
Yes. Well done. Yeah.
There
we go. Sorry, no, I'm very hot on my show notes, but I've unfortunately omitted that word. but yeah, so Steve, you've got some quite an interesting take on this, quite an interesting direction with your background as well.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking about it a lot over at the Unofficial Apple Weblog because I mean, this is really for the enterprise space, probably one of the biggest moves Apple has made ever. You know, they had some agreements in the past with, of course, with Microsoft. Basically, there was Microsoft handing them money and saying, by the way, make sure you put Internet Explorer on the Mac homepage, you know, when you start it up. So that was, you know, one of those things. You also had some little agreements here and there with some of the large enterprise organizations. But this is huge. I mean, it is absolutely huge. Now, Apple has a presence in the Fortune 500. Sure. I know they always throw out the numbers. You know, tomorrow they've got yet another one of their earnings calls. Yep. And every one of those, Tim Cook usually comes out and says, hey, by the way, you know, now we're in 98% of all Fortune 500 companies with iPhone or iPad, whatever it happens to be. So they've got that. They've got those machines in there. The biggest problem is that it may not necessarily be to the level that they want. You know, it could be that there are just a few devices in the IT department that somebody is testing, but they consider that to be in the enterprise, in that Fortune 500 company. Yeah. So I think this is really going to help, you know, validate Apple in the enterprise. You know, in the short run, I think it's going to help Apple to get, you know, some more sales of iPhones and iPads. I think in the long run, it's really got a lot of potential, especially in terms of the management tools that Apple and IBM are talking about kind of co-developing there. So that's going to be fantastic. Now, on that note, that I think it's a great idea, I worked for IBM between 1995 and 2004. And at that time, I was, or when I first started up there, I was a manager for a company in an IT department that had predominantly Macs.
Okay.
And so we were kind of an oddball organization anyway.
Yeah.
I went over to IBM, and of course, you know, this is nearly 20 years ago, but went over to IBM. And my first big project with the company was to go in and remove like 1,200 Macs and replace them with Windows 95 machines.
Wow.
Which was a really sad thing. So, the thing was, at that time, there was a lot more of a, I guess you could say, a hostile attitude. Apple wasn't considered to be a really production-oriented company. And, you know, when I think about the company now, you know, definitely they've got the devices. There's a huge app ecosystem out there. Mm-hmm. But the biggest problem they've got is they really don't have those management tools that everybody wants and needs. They've got some tools for pushing out mass applications. There are some tools for, you know, checking licensing on the devices. But I think the IBM idea here, the app development, the tools behind the scenes, really is going to help out Apple a tremendous amount. But I do still have a concern that there are two really, really different corporate cultures there.
Definitely, yeah.
Apple's always kind of been this, you know, laid back, very, I guess you could say, designer oriented.
Hippie.
You know, just kind of a hippies, you know, and IBM, you know, always had you always thought about the tie, even though it was funny because the first day I went to work for IBM was the day that they said, by the way, if you happen to be working at a client site and nobody's wearing ties, you don't have to wear a tie. So I never wore a tie again after that point. But, you know, I think IBM's become a little bit more Apple-like. In that they're a more diverse company. They're more, what's the term for it? They're definitely more services oriented than they used to be.
Definitely, yeah.
And Apple, I think, has really shown that they've got the smarts when it comes to mobile devices. So,
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the two kind of corporations clash, or clashes around. Well, yeah, I suppose clash is possibly the right word. I'm definitely interested to see how this all pans out. Because
I'm interested as well.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I work in enterprise. I'm just wondering, because I read the initial press release and I could not figure out for the life of me exactly what this thing is going to bring to the table. Because the way I look at it, if an enterprise wants to use, not wants to use, there are plenty of iPhones and iPads in the enterprise already.
There are, and, but they haven't used, like, my day job is I go in a lot of, like, big enterprise, like banks and currently working mm-hmm. with Scottish Government, and there's lots and lots of iPads and iPhones in there, but it's very convoluted for how to get your email on. I totally understand that you've got Exchange support on iPhones and iPads. However, on, like, companies like banks and things like that, they're not prepared to have emails completely insecure sitting just straight on there, so you have to use these third-party tools like Good, and... Ironically, right. Good is not good. It's better than it's better than nothing, but it's not good. So I mean, bringing in something like these, I don't know if it's going to be able to go so far as to be able to secure it in a way that makes banks happy to allow you to use the native mail client for the Connect Exchange. But sorry, I butted into your comment there, Chris. What were you going to say?
No, you're fine. Because I did want to kind of make this a discussion, but you're right. There are certain things that I can see a third party services team like an IBM being able to, okay, you want to take this application and mobilize it and be able to access it. But with the, you know, there's one side of this that doesn't quite get mentioned, and that's the fact that Microsoft has basically their Office 365 is now a $2 billion company. I mean, yep. They just launched this thing 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know? And so with, that just says a lot of things are moving to cloud-based and accessing them from mobile devices is not going to be as challenging as they were previously. So I'm just wondering, you know, are they going to be able to get in and get a foothold in time to mobilize applications and actually be able to change the mindset of current enterprise customers and say, okay, this is how you do it today, but we want to do it like this tomorrow from an iPad. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big challenge enterprises are slow to move. We all know that. Now, more power to them. In the challenge, because obviously anything, as far as I'm concerned, any type of innovation is good for everybody because it makes everybody else step their game up. So I'm happy to see it. I'm just wondering, you know, with this race to the cloud that is clearly going on, how much is it going to help? And that's where I'm kind of interested at.
Yeah, because IBM doesn't even have, I can't think of any IBM cloud products. I'm assuming they probably have one and it's branded in some way that I've never connected it with IBM before. But so that whole cloud thing's still missing from this equation. But possibly that's a reason that enterprise... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe just the enterprises that I deal with, they probably wouldn't be happy with the cloud. So it's possibly a good thing that IBM and Apple maybe aren't really talking too much about the cloud, and it's all going to be about kind of local device management and things like that.
You'd have to also think too. Hold on 1 second. But you'd have to also think too that a lot of those customers that are not don't feel so safe about moving to the cloud probably aren't going to be feeling that safe about moving to mobile devices as well. So, we'll have to factor that in too.
It's possible. It's possible.
Lest we forget, this is ever more entrenched siloing, because they not only do they wish to provide the platform as a service, they also own the companies that can provide said hosting. They own software. And they borg in other companies. So this is great news. This is great news for enterprise and corporate that don't want to play in the paddling pool. They just want to get involved, or they've got a big pot of money and they don't know how to get into the whole, let's get rid of the desktops and all the hardware infrastructure and just go cloud. And let's face it, all the C-level people are going to love their new iPads, aren't they?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, they definitely are.
I work in a corporation, and we just seem to go through iPhones hand over fist. It's incredible. the amount that we must be giving to Apple is just insane.
Sorry, Steve, say that again.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, one of the things that I think maybe pushed a little bit of this entire agreement between the two companies. Of course, I'm sure they've been talking for several years about this before they announced it. But if you took a look at what was going on with Office 365 for iPad and how it just initially back in 2010, shortly after the iPad came out, I remember talking to some Microsoft sales reps, and they're like, oh yeah, we're working on Office. We're going to have it available. It's going to be fantastic. Life is going to be so good. 2011, talked to some of their folks at Macworld. Same thing. Mm-hmm. We're working on it. It's going to be so great. It's going to be so wonderful. You know, and in the meantime, in that very short 1 year period, a lot of companies came out with some amazing productivity applications that were much more complicated than a spreadsheet, than a, word processor, than whatever. I think, honestly, what was holding things up in Microsoft was Steve Ballmer. And, it's, to me, just not a coincidence that Satya Nadella comes in and, almost immediately you see Office 365 for iPad out there. A lot of people have downloaded that. I'm not sure they've got that much of an uptake in terms of sales simply because it's, some people just don't want to spend money when they can get something for free when they actually
let me
buy
be clear.
And what I'm talking about there is iWork. But I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, they hit they hit 1 million subs faster than Facebook did.
Wow. Okay, that's great.
When it came out for the iPad, it went bananas.
Wow. A million.
So once again, I think it's a great thing that they actually finally pushed that thing out, and it's a hell of a nice suite. It really works well. One other comment I was going to make about IBM, you talked about some of the companies may not necessarily have systems in place that will work kind of in the way that they want to get things to work, I guess you could say. IBM's really good about knowing specific industries, and they have centers of excellence for probably every major industry out there, transportation, utilities, banks, you name it. And within those industries, they've done a phenomenal job over the years of building these large mainframe-oriented, unfortunately, but these large apps. And I think that's probably one of the areas that you're going to see a lot of cooperation there. They're already talking about 100 or so applications that'll be available for iPad and iPhone. A lot of that's probably going to go out and hit that big iron and provide people on the go with the information that they need every day. So, like I said, that company has such a good handle on industries, specific types of industries. They know them. They have experts in them. And that's something that Apple did, and now they've got it.
Yeah. It does kind of raise the question of if that's, I mean, Microsoft clearly has an enterprise arm and clearly does extremely well in the enterprise. This is Apple maybe managing to do something a little bit better, more integrated in the enterprise. How does Google now get into the enterprise? Do they buy BlackBerry, for example? I mean, how does Google deal with that?
Do they want to get into the enterprise?
Well, that's a very good question. Very good question.
I don't think Google want to get into enterprise. There's no advertising revenue in enterprise.
They've got the potential of every single person in that enterprise's eyeballs every single day on Chromebooks or whatever.
But look how they quietly shelved all of their Google private searching. They used to sell those little 2U boxes where you can run your own Google search. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's disappeared. Look at all the pro corporate packages you can buy for your cloud storage and cloud email. They just seem to be quietly either crippling them or just getting rid of them.
Yeah.
Because there's no money in it. They want to make nice commodity hardware for everybody in the developing nations to go and buy, and then look at their ads. Ha ha.
Well,
cracked it.
Yeah.
I see that. But everybody, if they managed to, you know what they could do? They could buy a phone system, and then in all of enterprise, there's a little phone on their desks, and that little LCD screen just kind of scrolls Google ads all day. That's the solution. That's how they get into enterprise. There you go.
Sir, you're a genius. You are a certified genius.
Solved it for them. Grand. So Google is to remove free from apps within app purchases. So this is when you're in the Google Play Store, and the little button beside the, or the button that you tap to buy the app, says free, if the app truly is free. And they're now removing it due to a European Union complaint or criticism from the European Union if there's an in-app purchase, because arguably, technically, it is not free if you have to do in-app purchases in any way, shape or form. So the European Commission has been pressing both Google and Apple for quite some time now to change the way the apps are mislabeled, because children are being targeted and consumers are being misled. Christopher, what's your thoughts on this? Are you, is this something that you support? Are you positive to this in any way, shape or form?
Well, yes, I mean, it's a good thing, isn't it? Because you get all these reams of parents. Is that the proper collective name?
I guess.
A ream of parents?
A flange of parents.
Yes. All right, we'll go with flange. Flange of parents who clearly have no idea and are still giving their children nice mobile devices with their account details pre-filled because it's nice and convenient. And you see the stories, don't you, all the time. You know, $500 on the credit card and all that kind of stuff. It's good. I describe this as doing a three. If you follow UK mobile news, three did this. They said, "Oh, look, we're making all these calls cheaper." Well, it's only because the EU forced you to. this is one step away from EU legislation, isn't it? So it's not a bad thing. This is the benefit of being in the EU, isn't it?
Yeah.
They can put their foot down, and eventually stuff happens. I noted though with some raised eyebrow that Apple has agreed to address this but haven't committed to a date as to when they're going to implement it.
So I think the reason for that is mainly because of all the parental controls and things like that that are coming in with iOS 8. So I don't know if you're familiar with the iOS 8 features, but basically what's coming in is the ability to kind of lock a phone down so that it you can make a group of people. So say mum, dad and the two kids. And if one of the children want to buy an app, it actually sends a notification through to the parent's mobile, wherever they are in the world, and they can
It's good, but that seems to be almost a bit of misdirection, because you can get apps which may appear to be free and ostensibly are free to use, but then at some point will either bundle some extra module which requires you to pay. I'd rather just know up front if there's going to be any additional cost for what you would, I suppose, describe as total ownership. And I'm more than happy to be made aware of all the itemized in-app purchases that could be available. It helps me evaluate a purchase.
Of course.
Before I go for it. So I would be in favor of having things only shown as free if they were checked and validated, either by a system or by a human, as being completely free.
See, I just
because otherwise it's not free.
Just to play devil's advocate here, I broadly agree with what you're saying. However, that's possibly not a good thing for marketing your app, because there's every chance that you could actually play an app fully in every way, shape, or form. So there's an app that I quite like on the iPhone. And it's that good, the name completely escapes me right now, but it's a golf app. It's full of in-app purchases. I can constantly buy things if I want to buy them. I never have, and I could play the game absolutely fine without it. Now, don't get me wrong, I probably would have leveled up much quicker, and I would have had a full bag of golf clubs at any opportunity that I wanted them, had I done the in-app purchases, but I haven't had to. And I probably wouldn't have bought that app, because it was a bit of a kind of a, okay, I'll have a go at that, if it was free. And then if I had to go through this screen that kind of said, and to do this, you have to do this, and this is going to cost you £7 and so on and so forth. I'm all for the model that kind of says, if you want everything, it's going to cost you a fiver. If you want the free version of the in-app purchases, it's free. And that I'd kind of be okay with that model. But this idea of taking free away, I don't know if that kind of, I think that's a negative thing for developers.
People want a deal though, don't they? And it's interesting what you said, where you could have everything all in for a fixed cost. It might be a slight discount. It could be a significant discount. They could scale the discount. They could even change it on an hourly basis if they wanted to. We have the power. Amazon changes their prices almost every time you visit the page.
Sure.
You could do it. And you have people who fall into one of two camps, don't you? You have people who just want to pay nothing, and people who don't mind paying a bit more if they feel like they're getting a good deal. And we're a nation of deal lovers. We love a headline deal. Mm-hmm. So that could work. That could work. Otherwise, it's just bait and switch, and I don't like that.
Yeah,
I'm all for this. As a guy who has shelled out enough money because my daughter has clicked on something inside, you know, especially, and you know, and hers was inside the Amazon thing. So right. as much as I love Amazon as a company, man, they have, I hope they bury them for this in-app purchasing stuff. Because my daughter, it's just one game and it's like, oh, you can, it's free. And then as soon as she's like, daddy, I can't do this part of it. And then I was like, oh, well, yeah, because you got to pay for it, honey. You know, so let's uninstall this app, baby girl. Buy one that works. but, you know, but yeah, and we had to put the lock on because she had simply just said, oh, I want to do this. Boom. There goes another dollar. Boom. There goes another $2. And yeah, it's not the money. It's just the principle of it. So
sure.
And this is a lot of people's business model is to trick people into getting these apps and then having to buy and buying stuff inside of it. So I'm all for it, And yeah, even in every single app store that exists, I wish they would all follow suit and kind of make this a bit more honest about the intention of the application.
That's it, isn't it? Some developers will make less money, but it's honest money. And I'm happy to give them my honest money for their honest work.
If you make an app I will pay for it. No, hands down, no problem.
Yeah.
Steve, what were you going to say there?
I think a really simple way for a lot of developers or, you know, even Apple or Google to place on any application that's got in-app purchases of any sort, just replace that free tag with IAP, you know, in-app purchase. And that way people know up front, oh, well, I'm going to pay for this one way or another down the road. You know, and there are apps that are completely free. I think about, you know, one of my blogging buddies who we've written a few books together, Erica Zinn. Erica and I, you know, Erica makes apps and she pretty much just gives them away. They're absolutely free. There are no in-app purchases. And I'd hate to see that free tag go away for those apps. So, you know, like I said, something as easy as just saying IAP on that button could really resolve it for a lot of people, I think. But, you know, like you said, this is in-app purchases are something that everybody developer-wise seems to have jumped on. I was noticing even Overcast, Marco Arment's latest product out there, is set up as a quote-unquote free app, but you have to pay $5 to turn everything on. So,
see,
you know, I could say he's misleading.
Yeah, and see that. I think that's where I kind of fall down. I'm all for. So there was a racing game recently, and basically you couldn't play the game after about 10 minutes without spending a serious amount of cash. I mean, over at least like 5-10 quid or something like that, because you had to kind of fix your car and all this kind of crap. And I'm against that. If you want to make a game and you make it free, you can play that game for as long as you want for free. There is no restrictions. If you want to level up faster, yeah, okay, fine. I'm all for that. I'm kind of okay, I have to admit, with the model that Mark Arment used on Overcast, because that's him saying, do you know what? I've made an app. I've made it free so that you can use it. He was completely clear in the description and everything like that, that of how you can buy. Because I think
you can
buy like the kind of the speed boost for kind of, I don't know, I think it was like $1 for the speed boost and $1 for the playlist and $1 for something else. And if you just want the whole app, it's $5. Job done. But the app is fully functional. In the sense that you can play podcasts on it for free. Yeah. And I'm kind of okay with that model because it's almost like your old kind of freeware that you used to get on CDs in the front of computer magazines, whereby you got enough of it for to know whether you were wanting it or not, and then you kind of pushed on and, and kind of bought the app. I'm okay with that model. And I kind of feel that people might be put off by this. And so just to run with the Overcast example, if you actually expressly said way at the beginning, this is all in-app purchases, it might kind of go, oh, I'm not sure. Okay, I will just stick with the Apple Podcast app, despite the fact that it's a bit rubbish. Because they maybe would be a little bit worried, I'm going to go all this half a hassle of downloading this and getting all my podcasts in, and it's not going to work, and I'm going to have to pay 40 quid or something like that. Maybe that's an extreme example, but there's got to be a better way to do this. And I'm just not convinced that removing the free tag for things that are genuinely functionally free is the right way to go about it. Maybe it's more curation.
But it didn't sound like they were removing the free tag for everything. It's just if you're free with in-app purchases. And this is the downside of abuse, and it's the reality. You know, when something comes out, it's a great idea. Here's an app. You know, you put in-app purchases. Everybody was excited for that type of thing, because if you want to unlock other stuff, you know, the developers can make more money. But clearly, people are being duped into these things because it's huge in kids games.
Yeah,
and that's where a lot of this stuff is stemming from, is that where kids are clicking on stuff and all of a sudden you're into it for another $10-$12 sure. for an app that was technically free. So I feel bad for the legitimate developers who are looking to do subscriptions inside their applications, or simply just creating a model where we're going to give you this, and you know, if you want more, you pay extra, which I'm fine with. You know, mm-hmm. so it's not the concept of it. It's just the application of it in the real world. People are getting had. And, you know, once you start abusing stuff, then all the rules come into play. And, you know, it sucks and it makes it worse. It happens in every walk of life. You know, there's a reason why there's a seatbelt law. You know, I hate wearing a seatbelt, but there's a law in place because, you know, insurance companies wanted to save money. So, well, you know, we can argue whether it's safe
people
or not.
Didn't want
That's
to
fine.
Die.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just not a fan of like common sense stuff, but these things happen because they get abused, and you know, and by nature, if we see a quick buck, we're going to abuse it. You know, look how Google continuously changes their search algorithms because people are gaming the system. You could search, and all of a sudden, a website that's been out for one day is all of a sudden on the first page of Google, searching for something innocuous because people were learning how to game the system. And so, when you game the system, the rules come down and hit you like a hammer.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So I think we're kind of broadly all aggressively agreeing on the same point there, that it's possibly a good thing, but it's basically been brought along by people being silly and gaming the system somewhat. So this podcast and all the others in the network is brought to you by two superb companies who do not offer in-app purchases because everything is awesome and upfront and superb with them. Well, the first one is UK2. They provide all the bandwidth and all of our hosting services for everything at British Tech Network Towers. If you want to go back and listen to any show on this network from way back in the beginning, you will still find those shows. You can dig back into all our old archives. You can find the very first Gamer Show, the very first episode of this, the very first iOS show, the early Mac shows and big shows. All of them are there, and that's because the awesome people at UK2 provide all of our hosting and bandwidth. If you want to support them because of all the great stuff that they do for the network, please head on over to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors or britishtechnetwork.com and click on the sponsors link. You will see UK2 at the top there, and you will see a whole bunch of voucher codes that you can type in and get all sorts of fantastic discounts on domains and VPNs, VPSs, everything like that. They're absolutely superb people over there. I am personally a customer of theirs and have been for quite some time, and their support is incredible. They regularly go above and beyond the Call of Duty, and I'm very, very happy with the service that I get personally, and I'm very happy with the service that they provide for British Tech. So please support UK2. And UK2 aren't just in the UK, remember, despite their name. You can also access their services across the pond as well. So please go and check them out, and please use the click through on our website so that they know that we sent you. The other people I just want to mention are the fantastic people at Network Union. If you work in a large IT company, then they can help you with BT, MPLS, WAN, SIP, and Ethernet connectivity. Whether you're new to BT or an existing BT client, you can choose to engage BT via Network Union. Existing clients, nothing changes. Same contracts and support, but you can change your account management to the Network Union, re-sign your contract with a different area of BT. If you're an SME with business broadband, they can check your fibre upgrades, call packages, even BT Office 365, and everywhere mobile, bundled together for savings or happy to deal with new inquiries. And for US listeners, these guys also help you out, because Network Union are agents for Magistrate, who are HQ'd in Dallas. Magistrate have a fantastic global MPLS WAN network. Any IT managers out there in the US using MPLS should also hit up Network Union using the sponsors page, because they can put you in touch with some fantastic resources. So again, britishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors link and find Network Union on there. Please use the click through on their website and just give them a little shout. Tell them what you're looking for. They may come back and say, we can't help you, but at least you know that they've checked and they know what you can do. If you just please use the click through, any information you give them, we've been assured will not be sent on to third parties or anything like that. They will just be used to contact you back. So give them a shout, see what they can do, see if they can help you out. Both Network Union and UK2, absolutely superb sponsors, and they support British Tech, so we'd hope that you support them too.
Do you know what? Then this comes from the heart. Mm. I really wish I'd known about the Network Union where I used to work. Right. I spent the best part of a year dealing with BT Business Direct, trying to resolve billing issues, yep, line issues, connection issues, exchange issues, more billing issues, double billing issues. And oh my, yes. I lost hair. I lost hair. I lost blood.
Sweat lost and skin. Tears.
Yes. Yes. Sanity. I've not found that yet. These guys look amazing. Yes. And MPLS is cool as well.
You know, I read that out on every show. I haven't got the first idea what MPLS is. What is MPLS?
You've got to get your hands on it. It's multi-protocol label switching. It's,
oh, well, I know exactly what that is now.
It's very, very cool. You can get layer 2, layer 3 MPLS. It runs over a variety of different kinds.
I didn't realize there was layer 1 and layer 2. Wow.
And you can do all kinds of like mad cool kind of discrete private networks which run over public networks. And there's lots of companies that provide MPLS, but BT have got a massive
so is this kind of like VPNs and
international backbone too.
Is this like VPNs and stuff?
Think VPNs for corporates with everything cool added on. MPLS is great. You can do site-to-site links. You can do pan-country links, international links. And it becomes effectively your own private, discrete WAN, if you will.
Okay.
But you don't have to pay for any of the infrastructure. It just runs over there. And you different companies do things different ways. If I understand it correctly, I think BT do, you can actually define a circuit. So they can nail a circuit up if you have a need for a connection between, for example, Dallas and BTN towers, and they can do that. But then if there are problems, it runs in like a dual concentric ring configuration. So if there's a problem with a part of the physical network, they can reroute around it and change your network topology. And they can do this for you instantaneously or manually, depending on how you want to do it. And you don't have to worry about any of it. They just manage it. MPLS is cool.
Great.
If you're a big business, MPLS is cool.
That's awesome. Well, I just learned something new there. So that's pretty good. So if you like any of
lots of long words, but I suggest you go to netunion.co/British/British Tech and ask them directly.
Yes, please do. Please do. And UK2 as well, if you have any.
Oh, yes. And UK2. Yes,
services. Gentlemen, do we have some cool things? I'm going to start with Chris. What have you got for us this evening? Oh, you've changed yours. You've got a different thing now. Oh, no, sorry. Too many Chrises. Chris W. Mr.
Give me
Woods.
Chris to spoil the show notes. My cool thing is... mine is made by a company called Rav Power. It's called the Rav Power Registered Trademark Luster 6,000 milliamp hour external battery pack charger, okay, with bonus flashlight built into it.
Wow.
Don't buy it for the flashlight, but I don't think you would. It's a great little thing. It comes in several different colors. It's a metal case. Essentially, it's a 6,000 milliamp hour battery for charging your devices. It's got a 2.1 amp output on it.
Never mind, sorry.
Are you all right there? It is a very exciting product. I
was trying to find...
You can charge your device devices from it. And the best thing is, it doesn't take forever to charge back up again, unlike some stuff. It charges it, I think it's an amp inlet. But because it's only 6,000 milliamp hours, it's just the right point. It's on the fulcrum between longevity and convenience. You can throw it in your bag or you can just put it in your pocket. I put it in my pocket when I'm walking around at work. I keep my phone topped up all day because I'm always listening to music on it constantly. I'm in and out of apps rooms, server rooms, you know, so I've got the headphones on. It's super, super convenient.
That is pretty cool.
And a nice thing about Rav Power is they use good quality cells. They use Samsung ICR cells, which are the same ones that people, like the hardcore e-cig fans, are always buying to DIY into their own e-cigs because they last for ages. They've got really good duty cycle wear and really good current and voltage output.
And you can get it.
And it's really cheap. I bought mine for £15.
Yeah, they're currently for £15 on Amazon. And you can get them in a kind of a lovely gold colour. So if you've got the champagne iPhone, you can match with that.
Oh, yes. Or if you have a £300,000 Virtu Nokia phone.
Well, yes, indeed.
Yeah, you can get for, matching Rav Power Luster.
You can also get in hot pink or blue, which is kind of an electric blue colour. They actually look like lighters.
The black one's pretty cool. It's very discreet. Yeah. It just sits there, and it's got some nice touches. Like it's got some battery power status LEDs, which are actually inside the bezel, and they're quite discreet. So they don't kind of blind you when you push the button, like some stuff does. You know, everyone's got this obsession with blue LEDs. I'm currently being blinded by my PC's blue LED.
Why do you think they have light in them? I have the power gen one, and it also has an LED light in it. I've not quite worked out a reason for it yet.
Well, you know, I didn't know to begin with, but it suddenly clicked. It is to show airport security that it's not an incendiary device. Look, this light lights up.
Yeah, but
please let me through security now. I'm not going to blow this plane up. It's a great idea. It's a better idea because how do you prove that your battery pack is a battery pack if you don't have a device to plug it into? Well, look, the light comes on. Oh, okay, that's fine then. Carry on.
Yeah, I was at the Commonwealth Games are starting in Glasgow tomorrow, in fact, and I was at the opening ceremony dress rehearsal on Saturday night, and they have like serious security. It's like airport security to get into the grounds for the Commonwealth Games opening ceremony, and it was soldiers who were manning the desks and everything like that, and I had my power gen battery pack in the pocket of my jacket, and I put it through the security because it is like airport security. You go through a metal detector and your jacket goes through as well, and they stopped in my jacket, and the guy was kind of turning his head and looking really puzzled, like always happens when I walk through airport security as well. And I shouted across to him and I says, it's a battery for a phone. And he looked kind of puzzled at me, and then they brought it out, and I had to kind of take it out and show them what it was. And I actually, by the end of it, I had about six of these soldier guys kind of standing around going, what does it do? And I was like, it's a battery pack for like an iPad and iPhone. Really? Where'd you get them?
They make those things?
I know. I should have had like some kind of discount code or something like that for me. Because I'm standing going, it's about 30 quid on Amazon. Oh, Power Gen 1200. The guy's writing it down in a bit of paper.
Yeah. Very good, very good. I'm a previous purchaser of Rad Power stuff. I also have a 16,000 milliamp hour unit, and that's really cool. I kept me going for a whole week when I was at I-51. Nice. It was really, really handy. Yeah. But the smaller ones are nice. You can buy the really tiny ones. But I have a Samsung Galaxy S3. Yes, there's still one person in the country who has one. It's me. And because it's the LTE version, its battery lasts about half a minute.
Sure.
So I have mine charged up constantly, and it's really useful.
I work beside two people who have iPhone 3Gs, so you're not...
Oh, God, please pass on my condolences.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, moving on in this week in power supplies. Steve, what have you got for us?
Well, you know, it was one of those things where I was trying to figure out exactly what cool thing I'd seen recently that I would talk about. Put in a battery pack, and so I immediately jumped onto it. Yeah, this one's actually pretty cool. It's from a company called Juno Power, and it's called the Juno Jumper. And the neat thing about it, you know, it's a 6,000 milliamp hour battery pack, and it can charge up your phone, but it can also jump start your car. And actually comes with a little set of boost cables. So you can jumpstart your car. And I didn't try that, but, you know, it is just absolutely cool. One of the niftier things I've seen in the last week.
That is awesome.
I love how it says that you can jump a completely dead car battery in minutes.
In minutes, yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. British Amazon doesn't have it, so I don't know if we'd have to import it from the States or something like that, but it's currently $99.99 in the States, but the Juno Jumper or the JunoPower.com website, it's currently sold out, so clearly very popular. But that is awesome.
It can do 12 volts at 300 amp peak power.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
You could bring people to life with that.
Well, that's the reason they got the clamps there, you know? I think his heart started.
Try it again.
Okay. Mr. Ashley, please beat that.
So, my pick is not going to be so much tech related. It's going to be more practical related. And it came from an issue I have. In my house, I have a three-story townhouse, and in the front of my house I have a water faucet for, you know, doing the lawn, and then I have one in the back, and I've lived in this house for 8 years, and probably within 6 months of living in this house I broke the faucet in the back.
Okay.
And so I've So, and I just never got it fixed. So I've always been dragging my hose basically to the front of the house and then running it through the house to the back of the house so I can, you know, use a hose in the back. And I just got fed up with it. I mean, hoses are heavy and a pain. And then you got to roll it back up and you got to store it somewhere. And then I had like three hoses to make sure it was long enough. And then I see this little thing on the internet, and not on the internet, on the, in my local Bed Bath & Beyond, excuse me. And it's the best thing because it works. How often do you come across something that says as seen on TV, and it actually works as it was seen on TV? And so my pick today is called the Pocket Hose Ultra. And this thing is a collapsible water hose. Oh, dear. And basically it, like, I can fit the whole 50-foot hose in the palm of both of my hands, as opposed to having to grab the hose out back and throw it over my shoulder like I'm about to go put out a fire. And I tested it out this morning. I hooked it up to my spigot. And what happens is...
Sorry, what's a spigot?
Well, same thing as a faucet.
All right, okay.
Faucet.
So a top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hooked it up, turned the water on, and what happens is the hose expands as it becomes full with water and gets to its full length. And then it expanded, it got longer, and I was able to water my garden this morning. And then when you turn it off, and as the water drains out of it, it starts to collapse. And sure enough, just like they said it would, it started to collapse. And the way it's kind of made of more of a different material than the typical rubber hoses, so it's no kinking, nothing. And then I was like, here's the big test. Can I roll this thing up and put it back in the original case, the little original box that it came in? And yes, sir, it certainly did. I rolled that thing back up, put it back in the original box, and put the lid on it. And I was like, this is money. So I don't know if any of you are tired of dragging 40-pound hoses around, or if you have, even if you have to go water your lawn somewhere, whatever your issue is, the hose that I have right now is going in the back of my truck and it's going straight to the dump. That's the last time I've touched this thing. Check out the Pocket Hose Ultra. So, and it's only $18 on Amazon, at least here in the States. I'm not sure how much it costs out there.
Yeah, $23.99 in the UK.
But wait,
you're absolutely right too. I bought one of those probably about a month ago. They're amazing. Uh-huh.
Anytime you see as seen on TV, I would normally tell you run the other direction.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of this, you know, this recent situation that I was in, I had to try it. I was like, it's $20, can't miss. You know, if it doesn't work, I'll just toss it aside. I don't care for $20, and it absolutely worked as advertised. Expanded when you needed it, and they make them in 75 and 100 foot lengths as well, but it's still, you can roll them right nice and tight, roll all the way back down. It's light as a feather, and you can just, I mean, literally throw it in a bag and put, you know, and store it, and you would never see that thing again until you need it. It is awesome.
And do you know what, I think Ewan Rankin has one at Big Ten Towers, and I saw him using it and I was amazed. And after having almost been strangled by my traditional hose pipe last week, I would quite like one of these. I think I need to employ a hose pipe wrangler at my house. It's just terrible. But these things look amazing. Oh, and also, if you go on Amazon, you can buy a pack of 12 and save 3%.
What?
Oh, yes.
Really? Yeah, why would you need a pack of 12?
Oh, why wouldn't you need
give a pack of 12? Give them out as gifts. Give them out as gifts to all your friends. Rescue them from hose hell.
Or keep them and just have 12 hoses. 12 hoses. Every faucet in the house has a pocket hose on it.
Or you can have a different one every month.
Want to have a shower in bed? No problem.
Oh, very good.
Why did I not think of this?
That's awesome. Cool. Okay. And it's also called Pocket Hose, which is quite handy for the show.
Oh, well. God. We were having a good laugh at that this morning. When I was telling all my minions from my show. I was like, you guys got to go get this thing. I was like, well, it's got the perfect name. I'm going to buy it just for the name.
Yeah, there's a number of different phallic references in your description earlier on, which I decided to leave alone. So
I thought I took the high road. You just plowed right into it. Okay.
Oh, very good, very good. So,
so to speak.
Grad.
Sorry about that.
Just to bring it back down to earth for a second, my pick is the Pebble watch. So in the last show, we were discussing the LG watch because Dan Griffin, we had in the show, he, of course, had a pre-order. Not pre-order, he had a review unit of the LG Android Wear watch. And last weekend, I was kindly given a Pebble watch by Ewan Rankin to test out and have a play with. And I am really, really chuffed with it. We sort of had a little bit of a dig and a poke at the idea that this LG G watch was just going to give you notifications and things like that. And what use is that? But that's all that the Pebble watch does. And I love it. Absolutely superb. Like, so when I'm in a meeting or something like that and my phone goes, I don't have to be that impolite guy who takes my phone out of my pocket to check who just texted me. I just slyly glance at my watch and I know exactly who's emailed me or something.
Which doesn't look bad at all.
So I'm very bad at leaving my phone on my desk and then my wife calls me and then I'm in bother because I haven't answered the phone or something like that. But today I was at one end of the office. To be fair, I was just blethering to one of my workmates and my phone was on my desk and my watch started to vibrate and it showed that it was my wife calling me. So I was able to walk from the opposite end of the office to pick up the phone for able to answer the phone of my wife. Absolutely superb. It's a lifesaver. I have to say, joking apart, I really, really like it. The notifications are superb. It means that I'm not having to go all the hassle and waste those extra carbs, sorry, calories by putting my hand in my pocket and taking my phone out. I could just twist my wrist and I know who the email was from. Superb. I genuinely really, really like it. The only thing about it is it's not a very attractive looking device. It's just sort of a bit of plastic and it does look sort of plasticky and the strap's a bit crappy. And I have a really nice watch that my wife bought me as a wedding present and when I was marrying my wife, for the record. She's not happy that I'm not carrying my nice watch anymore and I'm wearing, in her opinion, this ugly abomination. But I think, honestly, my opinion has changed quite dramatically in the last week of wearing this watch, that if Apple can produce something that actually looks like a nice watch, I think they could actually be onto something. I was a bit sceptical before, but I'm really chuffed with this. It's currently £125 on Amazon. That's for the standard one. This is just the standard one. You can now get the steel one as well, which I'm not actually sure how much that costs. You get some funny little games in it as well. There's a version of Tetris called Peptris, which I'm quite enjoying. And then there's this bizarre little game. It's not even a game, actually. You just start this guy mining, and he works from left to right. And that's essentially all it does. And every now and again, you can push a button, and he goes faster. I've not really quite worked out what the gamification is of that. But it's quite cool that he just kind of sits and mines down your watch during the course of the day. But yeah, I quite like it. It's a nice little thing, £125. That's
you
it.
Could buy 12, you know, you brought buy 12 up having a watch that actually, or having a smartwatch that would actually look good. I don't know if you've seen the, it's called the Activité from Withings or Withings, however you pronounce that.
Oh, I've never looked at it. Yeah.
It is absolutely beautiful. It is, you know, designed as a watch, but it provides activity tracking as well. Doesn't have the level of integration that I think a lot of people want with a smartwatch, but if you're just looking at something for, you know, activity tracking, they've got it. And I'm going to put that on the shared sheet over here. So if anybody wants to take a look at it, they can.
Grand. Yeah, I had a Nike Fuel Band, which I desperately wanted. And again, my wife kindly bought it for my Christmas a couple of years ago. And it occurred to me that the Nike Fuel Band is only beneficial if you're somebody who does any exercise. So I sold it on eBay because it was pointless. the other cool thing about this watch that I didn't actually realize it even did it. On Saturday, again, when I was traveling back from the opening ceremony at the Commonwealth Games, we had to walk from a train station in the centre of Glasgow to where our car was parked, just outside Glasgow. I said the centre of Glasgow, I don't mean outside Glasgow, it's quite a walk. I set in my phone the Google Maps directions, but equally, this was at about 11 o'clock walking through the centre of Glasgow, and I didn't want to just be carrying my phone quite openly. And I didn't realise it would do this. I was just planning to just kind of check my phone every couple of, like when we got to a junction or something like that, right, okay, we're still heading in the right direction. And it actually comes up on the phone and gives you the directions that you need to be heading in. So as we were walking along and we got to a junction, it would buzz me and say, turn right on this street. And so I was able to just turn right, and it was, that was just very cool. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't even know it did that.
That is cool.
Wow.
Yeah. I was quite chuffed with that. Anyway, so that's it. That's it. All that's left to do is to thank our special guest this evening. So if you could just tell the people where they can hear more of your awesome things. So Chris Woods, where can people hear more from you?
Well, if you're within 3 miles, you can usually hear me laughing. Alternatively, on the Twitters, Christopher W on the Twitters, or Google Plus. Just go google.com/plus Christopher Woods. That snappy URL.
Yeah, very good.
I love a bit of G+ because someone has to.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Mr. Ashley, where can people find you?
You can always find me on Twitter at BigChrisAshley.com. And of course, every Tuesday night, and we usually post Wednesday or Thursday, we record the SMR podcast. If you want to have the most fun you can have on tech, you got to check out me and my boys on the SMR podcast. A lot of fun. We could start talking about shoelaces and we could end up talking about tech. We never know, but it's a lot of fun. So.
I usually find you go the opposite direction, but yeah, I would agree. I would agree completely. I agree completely. That's a good show. You should check it out if you're not already. And Mr. Steve Sandy, where can people find you?
They can find me over at the unofficial Apple weblog. That's at TUAW.com or on Twitter at Steven Sandy, StevenSandE.
Very good. So just a couple of announcements just to make at the end here. First thing is, just to make you aware, there will be no show in 2 weeks. We normally do this show fortnightly, but I'm actually moving house, and this would be pretty much the day after I've moved. So the chances of me being able to set my studio up in time for it to do a show in 2 weeks is highly unlikely. So just to be on the safe side, I've decided to just cancel the show in 2 weeks, and we will be back in 4 weeks with the next show. So please don't email me and tell me there's been no show in 2 weeks, because I've already warned you. The other thing to tell you about is Patreon. Tons of you have already been over to patreon.com/British Tech Network and donated, and we really, really appreciate it. If you feel that this show is providing you, I think I worked out roughly, it's about 30 pence a show worth of value. So that's 60 pence, because a dollar is roughly about 60 pence with the current exchange rate. And we do 2 shows a month, so that's 30 pence each. If you feel that this show gives you 30 pence worth of entertainment every show, please head on over and give us a dollar or anything you can afford. You know, if you want to give us $100, that's absolutely fine as well. I will accept anything that you want to give us. If you don't want to give us anything, that's absolutely fine as well. Don't feel that you have to. We're going to continue to do the show and things like that. But if you feel that you want to and you can and you have the availability, please head on over to patreon.com/British Tech Network and chuck some money our way. And the other thing to note is we had the bash a couple of weeks ago. It was absolutely superb, and we are now announcing that there will now be a Northern Bash. If you're a regular listener of the Gamer Show, you will know that we normally have a gamer quiz and curry at Christmas time. And generally, that's just people who've been on the show during the year. But what we're going to do this year is we're actually going to have it as a little bash and invite you, the listeners, to come join us. Now, you do have to come to the wilds of Scotland. Basically, we are roughly about 25 miles south of Edinburgh. We are that remote. We do not have a train line or motorway within 25 miles of us. The closest motorway and train station is in Edinburgh. However, there's buses, taxis, and I'm sure we could probably do something if you give us a share and you want to be there. We will have information on that on the website soon, where you can get tickets sorted out. It'll be quite cheap because frankly it's Scotland, and you'll be able to come along. It'll be awesome, and we'll have great fun. We'll have an Xbox set up and possibly a PlayStation, a Wii U. We'll have some Mario Kart tournaments, just a few beers, and then we'll go and have a curry afterwards and just celebrate Christmas and British Tech all at the same time. If you want to find out any more from me, you can get me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. If you want to contact us, any questions or comments about the show, please email them to British Tech Network at gmail.com, or tweet me. If you want to follow the network on Twitter, it's at British Tech. Please head on over to iTunes and give us a couple of reviews if you don't mind. We haven't got anything on there just yet because we're quite a new show, but it really, really helps us out if you could give us a review or two. Tell your friends, even if they don't listen to the show, give us a review. It would be grand. That's it. That's pretty much everything that we have to say tonight. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your ears this evening. Good night.